Adventist World Radio. From broadcast to baptism. Powered by SID Media. Adventist World Radio. From broadcast to baptism. Powered by SID Media.
Right, good afternoon once again. We are going to be having a conclusion with our guest, Prudence Poswa, who has been talking to us over the last couple of weeks about an interesting research on the subject of divorce and the impact these have on the children as they grow up. And they traced these from their childhood until they got into adulthood. And so she joins us today to give us the conclusion of that particular research. Prudence, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Brother Maloti. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. I hope you're well.
I'm well too, thank you.
Lovely, thank you so much. Well, we've been talking about this subject over the last couple of weeks, and I think we are getting to the conclusion of it today. And so we are going to be, having the last one, and I'm already feeling some withdrawal symptoms here because, we've been enjoying these discussions and quite sad that we are coming to the very end of it. But before we get into today's discussion, could we perhaps recap on the last discussion that we had?
Yes. So maybe I can just take you a few sessions back. That the title of the study that we were looking at throughout the series was Young Adults' Perception of How Parental Divorce During Childhood Has Influenced Adult Functioning.
Yeah.
And this study was done in a qualitative, semi-structured interviews. And we interviewed six young adults from Gauteng. And we then took the data and conceptualized it using the social constructionism. And last week, we were just going through the findings, And just a quick summary that in childhood and young adolescents, the quality of the parent-child relationship with both parents deteriorated. That's what the young adults brought out,
right.
And that became strained and distant, and it also impacted negatively on their academics as well as the self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the coping mechanisms that some of the children at the time used was their academics, because they then they studied a lot. That's what they had control over, and it helped them to be able to cope with what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But in young adulthood, we see that the relationship between mom and child improves significantly, while that of father and child is still non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
They described it as distant, non-existent. The relationship was still tense, and this contributed significantly to how they felt in terms of their sense of belonging, and how they formed relationships with other people in general, but more specifically intimate relationships.
Now you're saying, before you continue, you're saying that the relationship with the dad or the father would then be almost non-existent, as it were. Is it moving from a relationship that was healthy during the home and it has deteriorated over time?
Yes, so the relationship before the divorce was a good one. After the divorce, the children then reported that after the divorce, the relationship with their father got strained.
I see.
And the quality thereof deteriorated, and it didn't improve even when they were in young adulthood.
I see.
Yes.
All right.
So one of the benefits that came out is that the young adults said that they have now gained a sense of independence and personal growth, where they are able to look at things objectively and understand things better, But today we'll be looking at the recommendations. What then do we make sense of all of this? Because the point of the study is to say, this is how some people dealt with and processed the whole divorce of their parents and how they are functioning now. But how can we learn from them so that children who are still going through this process are able to navigate it much better with the knowledge of how others might have navigated it?
Mm-hmm.
So part of the recommendations that we'll be going through today are taken from the results and how we can change some of the negative impact thereof.
Mm-hmm.
The first recommendation is having open communication with your children, you know, in as much as I think a lot of the times parents neglect to speak to their children about difficulties that they feel they can't change or they can't control. But what happens then is that children bottle things up and they are unable to communicate and to share how they feel. And their emotion becomes stuck inside and they are unable to navigate and to let it out. Have open communication and discussions with your children about what is happening, you know, how you are feeling as the parent, the difficulty that you know that they are experiencing. Acknowledging that they are going through a rough patch helps children to know that they are seen and that they are valuable. You remember when we spoke about the stages of development, that children need to be seen. They want to know that what I'm feeling is not just because I'm crazy, you know, and acknowledging and having open communication with that, rather about all of that, allows for them to be able to transition through that stage with ease.
Right, right.
Another recommendation is to reassure your children. Children have a tendency to internalize bad things that happen, you know. You'll see, for instance, a small child that will beg the father and say, no, don't leave, I'll become a better child,
I'm
going to do ABC, because they attribute bad things that happen around them to themselves, and they take responsibility for them. Reassuring your children and making them know that the divorce, or rather what has happened between your dad and I, is our decision. It has nothing to do with you. And to separate them from the divorce itself, you know, this is why we see the poor self-esteem, because they blame themselves and their sense of worth deteriorates, because they feel that this is something that I have done, even if it's not consciously, but unconsciously they blame themselves for it. And it's important to reassure them and to separate them from the reasons of the divorce or the divorce itself.
Yeah, yeah. And others, other children, before you get to the next ones, I've actually observed that with younger children, they may not even have the appreciation of what actually happened. And so, you know, they would continuously ask, where's daddy? When is daddy going to come back? And they would continuously ask the mom or whoever is in the home, when is daddy going to come back? I miss my daddy, etc., etc. And mothers are generally at pains explaining, especially to the very young mind, that daddy is not coming back anymore. Because, I mean, if daddy is alive, why is he not coming back? So I like that you actually proposing these recommendations. Yes, please continue.
And that's actually very important, because as we reassure children, we need to be cognizant of their stage of development. Where are they at?
Yes,
you know, because I'm not going to explain to a 3-year-old that, no, your dad did 1, 2, 3, you know, in explicit detail, because that will hurt the child.
Yes.
But you want to, even if you are reassuring and you are not lying, you know, but you are sieving the information to be accurate for the ears that you are bringing it to.
Lovely.
Another thing is, part of the open communication is acknowledging the pain that the child is going through. You know, even though this is your divorce as the parent, the child experiences the pain of the divorce. And it's important that you do not get consumed by your own difficulties and pain that you are going through, that you forget that of the child. Acknowledge that, I know that this is hard for you. I know that you want your mom to still be living with us, but unfortunately that's at this point cannot happen, you know, but acknowledge and keep acknowledging the fact that the child is experiencing pain because of what is happening there. Encourage healthy coping mechanisms. With acknowledging the pain, you want to say, I know that you are going through this, and I acknowledge this, and I know that this is your dad and I is doing, you know, but I want us to try some healthy coping mechanisms to help us deal with the pain, because acknowledging it alone and leaving it there does not really address how the child must deal with it, you know, but it's important to then meet that with healthy coping mechanisms. And it can be part of the new routine in the new structure, you know, you say, this is what we'll do together. We'll go jogging together. We'll do 1, 2, 3 on Sundays. We'll go and visit your mom, or we'll go and visit your dad, you know, but developing healthy coping mechanisms that the child can implement in terms of how they can deal and manage with the difficult.
Must be also difficult for the parent, because while you are also going through a very painful patch, a difficult time, you know, and I've seen other parents would also disintegrate in the in that period, to the extent that they're not even in a position to actually, you know, help the child, because they themselves are falling apart.
Yeah, that's very true. And that brings us to the next recommendation that I had, that it's important for parents to take care of themselves. You know, you can't be a good parent if you are falling apart, if you are not okay. You can't give to the child what the child needs. You remember we spoke in one of the sessions that parents are resources that help children to navigate through difficult times in their lives. And in this time, you need to be there for that child, you know. So it's important that you go for therapy, you speak to people that are around you, you make sure that you incorporate healthy living in your life, so that you are better able to deal with your emotions and you are better able to manage, so that you can give to the child what the child needs at that time. But taking care of yourself is not selfish, you know, because you can't give what you don't have. And in that time, you need to have some sanity and to be able to see things clearly, so that you can be able to meet the child where they need you the most.
I remember I was, you know, once, you know, in my past life in the corporate, in the insurance industry, and one of the traumatic phases of life that were identified, you know, apart, of course, from divorce, I mean, from you know, your normal death and stuff like that, was divorce. It, I think it was high up there on the traumatic phases that some people may be going through. Of course, it mentioned issues like death. It mentions issues like loss of, you know, children through death, etc. But divorce was high up there, which means that it's a very traumatic space that people go through. So you are saying that people must acknowledge that this is traumatic and actually get help for it.
Yeah, that's true. You know, because for death, we even have life insurance. We know that it's going to happen, you know, even if it's not nice, but we prepare for it.
Yeah.
But no one goes into marriage with the plan of getting divorced, you know. And when it happens, it's a shock to the system. We invite everyone to our marriage to witness what is happening. But when we divorce, you know, you find talks here and there. No one really talks about it. And that hurts the child, because that actually makes the child feel like what I'm going through is not important. I'm not important because what I'm feeling is not acknowledged. It's not seen, you know, and that's part of what damages the self-esteem and the self-worth of the child growing up. Another thing that is important is that, remember, with divorce, there is sometimes conflict between the two parties, between the two parents, you know, and because they are not getting along now, it becomes very difficult for them to agree on how they are going to meet the needs of the child, both physically and emotionally, you know, but to make sure that things for the child are still done in a way that needs to be done, it is important that parents invest in a parenting plan, you know. You remember the one participant that said they were the ones that needed to go to maintenance court for their dad and to do, and that impacted them negatively. You know, you don't want your child to now take the responsibility of growing themselves because you and the other party are not agreeing on things that are fundamental. So it's important that you invest in a parenting plan. You have a mediator that says, you will be responsible for this. This is how this is going to go. And everything is documented and there's an agreement. And that also contributes to the consistency in terms of child upbringing that is needed for the child as they grow up. It helps the child to feel safe, you know, because in as much as things are not going well, I know that there's never going to be a day where I'm going to be kicked out of school because school fees is not paid. There's not going to be a day where I don't have clothes because, you know, things like that. And that helps them to feel safe and to know that they are taken care of as well. But sometimes, because this is difficult for parents, and we've spoken to this is difficult for parents. Sometimes it is important to invest in additional support for your child, you know, taking your child for therapy, taking your child for counseling, taking them to see other couples that might have gone through certain things, you know, that might have gone through divorce, that might give better insight than you might be able to at the time, is also very important, you know, to say, you know, right now I'm not in a position to be able to do 1, 2, 3, but I'm going to outsource these so that the child's development does not stop or deteriorate because of my inability to be able to provide certain things at this time, mm-hmm. you know. So invest in opportunities where there is other external input into the child, mm-hmm. Such as therapy and counseling.
Now tell me, you know, you're talking about outsourcing, you know, of some help, etc. There are instances mm-hmm. where, you know, especially the parent who has now remained with the child or the children, that they feel that, you know what, my life is definitely falling apart. I'm not coping. I'm trying to grasp what is happening, but everything, it just doesn't make sense. Is it advisable to say, you know what, let me take these children to my sister or to my brother, at least for a year or two, while I try and regroup? Is that advisable? Would that be much more negative? Because a child may then feel that they've lost both parents. I don't know. What's your view on that? And how? What would be? Is that part of the recommendation?
No, that is not part of the recommendation. The recommendation is that parents take care of themselves so that they can take care of children.
I see. You know? Mm-hmm.
But of course, there are instances where it is very difficult for the parent in their best effort to do things that will help them to be okay, mm-hmm. but they are still not, you know. It is better for a child to be taken care of by a primary caregiver who is present emotionally and physically. Mm-hmm. And if the parent at this time is unable to do that for the child, then it is better to then ask someone else to be able to step in for them. While, of course, you still take care of yourself, while you still maintain contact, you know, even if I'm not there physically, but the child needs to know that I still love them and I'm still there, you know, maintaining things like phone calls, visit now and then, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Where you are able to gather strength for a few hours right. rather than every day where mm-hmm. it might be difficult for you to mm-hmm. then really be present for the child. Because having a parent who is unable to see me and who is unable to value me and to acknowledge that I'm going through pain and to be able to hold that for me mm-hmm. is more dangerous than to be sent to an aunt who can be emotionally present, you know, mm-hmm. who can be a source of support for me as I'm going through this. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we can continue with our recommendations. These are quite eye-opening.
Those are all the recommendations that I had. But I think in a nutshell, the important thing that came out in the study is that the relationship between the parent and the child becomes a buffer, you know, for the child to be able to navigate through the difficult time. Mm-hmm. And even if things are difficult, you know, it's important that parents maintain close relationships with their children, you know, mm-hmm. whether you are still living with the child or not, but maintain a close relationship with the child, consistent close relationship, so that the child knows that I'm valued, I'm seen, and I'm important, even if things are not going okay, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, these are very nice. I've seen one or two instances where, you know, after the divorce, the parents try their level best to make sure that the life of a child is comfortable. You know, they meet from time to time. They would go for, you know, just as a family, once every while, maybe at dinner and everybody is here. Maybe they would meet for, say, let's go for a weekend. I know one couple in, I think in KZN, would even go for, you know, weekends, even if they don't live in the same hotel, but they're trying to be there for the children. Would that be giving a child a false hope? Because others would say, no, it's going to give my children a false hope. It's better that we just deal with it like this. And no giving of false hope whatsoever. What's the thought?
You know, this thing of false hope comes out as a result of poor or non-communication with the child. You know, children are able to hear. And if we communicate with children and tell them, this is what is happening, this is what is going to happen, this is what we are planning to do, you know, and they become part of the process, they are better able to receive what is happening.
I see.
But if we don't talk to children, and, you know, we do things and we don't involve them, they don't know what is happening, they are going to have false hopes. Because the reality is that parents, or rather children, need both their parents,
true.
You know. And that's why it's important that even after a divorce, we still communicate. You know, we still make sure that we are still both there for the child. This thing of divorcing and one parent moves to Australia, the other one stays here, is not very good for the child, because the child still needs both the parents. And physical presence contributes a lot to emotional support and just being there for the child.
Yeah. You know? Well, beautiful. Well, Prudence Poswa, thank you so much for joining us. Prudence Poswa is a counseling psychologist who is based in the east of Johannesburg. Well, Prudence, before I let you go, some may have listened to this series and some may think, wow, actually maybe need to speak to Prudence on a private capacity. How do people get hold of you if they need to interrogate this subject with you and maybe meet for counseling or anything like that?
Yes. So I'm reachable on email on info@prudenceposwa.co.za. That's Poswa without an H.
Okay.
Or on cell on 060-885-1845.
So it's info@prudenceposwa.co.za.
Yes, that's correct.
All right. And then number, just once again.
It's 060-885-1845.
1845. All right. Those are the numbers. Prudence, I do really appreciate the time that you spent with us here on AWR. And I do hope that our listeners who have joined us since we started the series have been the more wiser now. And if you are out there and are going through this situation, whether you are part on the child side or on the parent side, and you really need some assistance, Prudence Poswa is available to do that for you. Prudence, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, brother. I really appreciate it. Bye.
Bye.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.